It's quite a charming experience. I first wrote this article at the end of last year, after the Russian airliner had been brought down while taking off from Sharm el-Sheikh. Just in case you would never have guessed, I should make it clear that this isn't one of my travelogues, and it's a fact that I'm not too fond of Egypt or Egyptians. As everybody says, I'm not a racist. However, I do speak from my own personal experiences, and I've a long memory. As a travel writer, I've spent quite a few visits to many hellholes in the Middle East and North Africa. Out of all of them, if I were to recommend giving the world an enema, that procedure in which liquid or gas is injected into the rectum in order to expel its contents, the country where I would nominate to insert the tube would be Egypt. I have every sympathy for those poor souls who perished on the Russian Airbus A321, downed over the Sinai Desert, probably by ISIS. Incidentally, my inquiring journalist mind finds it very difficult to believe that the plane was blown out of the sky on October the 31st, and the wreckage was found nearly straight away, and by November the 10th, with modern technology, the Egyptians hadn't discovered whether the plane was blown up by a bomb on board or not. It doesn't surprise me that the Egyptians weren't telling the truth, as it's not in their nature. It's not as though the wreckage disappeared many leagues beneath the sea. I've been dealing with lying, thieving Egyptians since the early 1950s, when my first ship moored at Port Tufik in the Red Sea. Thank the Lord we only had to endure their hospitality for 3 days on that occasion. The local natives in bumboats swarmed upon us like scavengers and stole everything that wasn't bolted down. We spent the whole 72 hours of our stay cutting grappling hooks as the dirty Arabs tried to scramble aboard. They used every trick in the book to pillage and steal. If the crew was momentarily distracted or inattentive, we were robbed of most of our personal belongings – clothes, cigarettes, cameras, watches and other possessions. Most of the food from the galley disappeared along with every tin of paint, together with paintbrushes. Tins of jam, packs of rice, all disappeared from the holds. I wouldn't be surprised if that's where the description of the swarm of locusts in the Bible came from, or at least where they got the idea from. Weren't they Egyptians too? The only thing that was untouched was several thousand tons of unrefined demerara sugar that was battened down in the cargo hatches. At that time, six of our crew were Lascar seamen, all Muslims from the Indian subcontinent, all perfectly pleasant men who fitted in with our team. Pakistan hadn't been invented in those days, but I assume that that is where their homeland would have been partitioned into. Fellow Muslims or not, they were the first and easiest targets to be picked on by the Egyptians, and they lost nearly everything they owned. I made three more trips on different ships passing through the Suez Canal that produced similar raids from marauding Egyptians, so a visit that I made to Egypt in 1956 was far less unwelcome. That time I was aboard HMS Bulwark as a member of the Special Boat Squadron taking part in what is to be known as the Suez Crisis or the Kadesh Operation, taking part in an invasion by Israel, Britain and France to take back control of the Suez Canal and remove President Gamal Abdel Nasser. The outcome of that snafu, that's a rude naval term, so Google it yourself, the outcome is well known. Once the dust, or perhaps it was sand, had settled, I just happened to be a qualified underwater demolition specialist in the SBS, and of course on the spot, so we spent just over 3 months clearing the canal of the ships that Nasser had scuttled in order to block the transit of ships through the canal. That was just one of his well-thought-out plans akin to crapping on your own doorstep, rather similar to blowing up your own tourist trade. At least the thieving Egyptians were too afraid of us and tended to steer clear of us because of our reputation as killers. Even so, one of our teams had an outboard motor nicked from one of the ribs. That's a rigid inflatable boat, if you didn't know. They were slippery bastards. Since those heady days, I've visited Alexandria, Cairo and the Valley of the Kings with my travel writer's hat on, but forewarned is forearmed, and I've managed to hang on to my valuables. I've witnessed dozens of fellow travellers being relieved of their possessions, though. So in spite of being an old Egypt hand, I've never grown even to have the slightest soft spot for either the country or its people. Unlike my son, that is, and his fellow diving chums who regularly visit Sharm el-Sheikh for fantastic diving in the Red Sea, although they do now tend to stay aboard a diving boat while they're there. I've made my feelings plain, questioning why anyone would want to fly out to a glorified Butlin's holiday camp in Egypt, spit, where they have scant respect for women and contempt for even basic human rights. Okay, so it's cheap and many holidaymakers have no idea whether they're in Egypt or Eritrea, just so long as the sun is shining and the beer is cheap. Many venture no further than the all-you-can-eat salmonella buffet and the swimming pool. The whole point being to drink yourself silly and come home with a radioactive tan and a souvenir stuffed camel, perhaps. Sharm el-Sheikh has gained a reputation as being a safe holiday destination, thanks largely to the fact that it is heavily guarded by the Egyptian military. It's heavily guarded because Egypt is full of Islamic nutjobs looking for a chance to kill infidels. Why would anyone in their right mind choose to holiday in a resort that has to have a round-the-clock guard by the army? After all, you wouldn't choose to go for a holiday in Afghanistan or Iraq. If it does prove to have been a bomb planted by ISIS, I wonder if their intention was to hammer the nail in the coffin of Egypt as a holiday destination for good. Talk about fouling their own doorstep. Good thinking, muscle men. Thanks for listening.